part of being a reforming perfectionist means that I'm so much more comfortable breaking any perceived rule if somebody gives me permission. Mm-hmm. And that's why this email from one of our listeners tickled me pink. She says, "Hi, Amy and Sherry. I love the permission slips. Are you kidding me? I don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed for failing? Wow. I've wasted a lot of emotional energy and time on that one. Seems like I should have figured that out before age 40-something.
I love it. Hey, if you're listening and you don't know what permission slip she's talking about, head over to gritandgracegirls.com and sign up for our email list, and you will get 12 permission slips that will help you break bad rules.
You know, at the end of our podcast, it makes me happy every time we say break it. Those bad rules can really get in your head, right?
It's my favorite part of the show. You know, as soon as we're done recording, I always giggle like a fiend. Well, I so identify with a listener who sent us this. She said, "My biggest struggle is breaking these default ingrained thought patterns." Boy, those are the hardest ones to break.
Oh, yeah. And I call those ingrained obsessive thoughts in my head the loop. And the loop is hard to lose.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, good girls breaking bad rules.
Today, we're talking to Carrie Scott, author of Uncommon, Pursuing a Life of Passion and Purpose. Carrie is a speaker, author, and life coach who is honest about her life and faith, stumbles, fumbles, and all. Her ministry focuses on helping women untangle their self-worth from the world and secure it in Jesus. Carrie and her husband, Wayne, live in Colorado with their two teenagers.
So if you feel like you're being held hostage by old thought patterns, Carrie is sharing some practical ways to retrain your brain and find freedom.
So Carrie, I've read your wonderful book. Tell us about the title. What do you mean by uncommon?
I think so often it's difficult to see the difference between people that believe in Jesus and people that don't. I mean, I can even say that about me. There are times I'm driving my car that you would never know a Jesus-loving girl, right? I felt like that uncommon was this battle cry, this call that God was giving me to rise up and live my life differently. Because our whole reason for being on earth is to point others to the Lord, to our Father in heaven. And if the way we speak and the way we live and how we're going about our day to day is not pointing others to Him, we're missing something. And so this call to be uncommon is really this call to be different, to live different, to be more intentional, not perfect, but more purposeful and intentional in how we live our life.
I felt the whole time I was reading it, I felt like it's such a mentoring book. Like you have the girlfriend voice, so it's friendly and warm, but it is a mentor calling us up. And I was challenged and just loved that challenge.
I felt my toes being stomped on, and then you had to go and bring up the car. I mean, what is that about? I'm supposed to be Christ-like the way I drive my car? Hello? Where'd that come from?
Seriously, just this morning, I'm driving my kids to school, and I'm sitting at a stoplight, and it turns green. It's clearly green. It's been green for 5 seconds, and the car in front of me has not moved, and I yelled at the top of my lungs, "Start driving!" And my kids both looked at me, and they said, "That's great, Mom. That's really great." So it's so easy to live common, normal, ordinary lives that everybody else lives, that the world tells you is acceptable, and you deserve to live this way, you deserve to act this way. But for us to rise up and live differently, to decide that living uncommon and pointing others to God is a goal of our life, an objective, I like people like that. Those are the people I want to hang out with.
Beautiful.
Well, in chapter 5, which you called Uncommon Faith, you said something that totally resonated with me. You said, "Too often we cry out to God, 'Show me first, and I'll trust you second.'" And I'm like, "Oh, you mean we're not supposed to do it in that order?" And then you talked about something that is like so from my childhood. You talked about Weebles. So kind of explain the whole Weeble analogy. I think it's brilliant.
thank you. I really dated myself talking about these weevils, but it was this toy back in the day where you couldn't knock it over. So weevils had a center of gravity at the bottom of it, and they would move and shake and weeble, and you could knock it over, but they always came back to their upright position every single time. And so the whole goal of what you tried to do with this toy was to knock it down and keep it down, but you couldn't do it. And I saw that as such a huge parallel to faith, that we do get knocked down. And for us to think that we're never going to get beat up by life, for us to think that because we are Jesus girls, it's all going to be easy and that God is going to clear every path for us is unrealistic. But what is realistic is to think when we get knocked down, when life comes at us and the storms blow us over, we have no choice but to get back up. That's the uncommon response. The common response is to hide under the covers, eat cookie dough, and watch, you know, chick flicks. That's the common response.
But cars and cookie dough? Really, Carrie?
I'm so sorry.
Gosh.
But for us to get out of our bed, we can't sit in our mess any longer, girls. We can't do it. We're taken out of the game, and it is time for us to embrace this call to live differently.
Preach, girl.
You said something else that just challenged me to my core, but I think I can read this more easily as I approach 50 than I would have read it in my 20s. God has a perfect track record in your life. He has answered every prayer the way you needed it to be answered rather than the way you wanted it to be answered. And that was so much harder when I was younger. Now I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, thank God. Oh yeah, thank God. So share what this has looked like in your own life.
Well, a big example that comes to mind, and I am 50, so I know exactly what you're saying. But we were trying to purchase this house across town because we had moved our kids to this other school that was across town. And it was a long drive and traffic and, you know, me and driving behind a wheel and tell people. So we were trying to curb that yelling experience. So we found this perfect house. It was in the perfect neighborhood. It was at a good price. It would have cut down on so much time. It was perfect. It was great. It was everything we wanted. And we put a contract on the house and we couldn't sell ours. I think we had over 30 showings of the house we were living in and it wouldn't sell. And we got to the end of our time frame and the sellers of this other home that we wanted graciously extended the contract for like another 15 days. And so we did everything we could to get our house to sell and it didn't. And we lost this house. And I was furious. I remember screaming out to God and just saying, what is wrong? We're not, you know, selling babies and having a drug lab in our basement. We just want to be closer to school and church. Like, what have we done wrong here? I know that's hard to imagine that I would get angry, but I was so mad. Well, we stayed in our house for another couple of years. And all of a sudden, the most amazing neighborhood opened up with a ridiculously low price. A realtor offered to sell our house for dirt cheap. The cash buyer came in and purchased our other house that wanted us to fix nothing. And we got into this house so much cheaper. Wow. And so such a better place. And we had to wait 2 years. So that's a perfect example of God, I want you to answer this prayer this way and going, okay, maybe you see down the road and there's a better yes. And that's what we have to wait for sometimes is if he says no here, it's because there's a better yes down the road.
So good. My word for the year is believe. And man, I'm learning so much. And yesterday, what I journaled and then blogged about was how believing is confident rest. That's exactly what you just described. Faith is confident rest that you're not, sorry, Carrie, that you're not screaming at God about the house you lost because this is the goal, right?
Hey, I own it. I own it.
I'm not there yet either, girl. But I just had that realization that you're like, okay, believe, faith. I can believe and know that something different is coming and that God's way is better.
Well, it's that verse that hit me between the eyes when I wrote my book Untangled. It's that Psalm 46:10, and we all know it as be still and know that he is God. But in the NASB, it says cease striving and know that he's God. And that hit me between the eyes because I realized, That's all I do is strive. I am striving mm-hmm. to win. I am striving to meet deadlines. I'm striving to be known. I'm striving to provide good content. I'm striving to be the right mom and the right wife, and just to sit back and be obedient and let God be God and realize that we are not. That's a huge, huge part of walking out uncommon faith.
So one of the things that God's really been doing in my heart this year, as well as building faith, is working on me about kindness. And one of your chapters, I was so excited when I got to it, Uncommon Kindness. I loved what you said, that you used to think that kindness was a mark of weakness. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I come from a very rough background. And so I decided to face life with a sword in my hand, and I fought every battle within a 50-mile radius. And I would see all those people that were so kind and were able to turn the other cheek or to just not live offended and to just respond with grace and kindness. And I always thought, you guys are weenies. Like, we need to annihilate. You know, in my family, I always say this, my husband's the diplomat and I'm the assassin. So, you know, so that's kind of how we approach everything. So kindness, to me, I always kind of saw that as you're weak. I started looking at some of these people that were so kind, and I realized how much courage and strength it took to be kind when what you wanted to do is slap someone upside the head. And not even to be a fake kind. They were genuine. I think of all the times I have had someone respond to me in kindness when they should have slapped me upside the head, because I came at them full bore, you know, mama bear and all, or just from my wounded self, because I'm so imperfect and God is still healing some places in me that make me rise up in anger when those places get poked. But I'm realizing that it takes greater strength. It takes stronger faith. It takes more courage. It takes uncommon forgiveness. It takes a position of gratitude and gratefulness to even be able to reach out and be kind to somebody. This was a hard chapter for me to write. Talk about stepping on toes. This one knocked me to the floor.
Yeah, it is difficult. I did a challenge earlier this year, and to be intentionally kind is actually hard work, and it's refining work. You talk about someone who was kind with expectations. What's that about?
Well, and let me jump in and say, if that was me, I apologize, because I'm like, the perfectionist in me was like, I'm reading this book and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wonder what month that was. Maybe I'm the one who blew it. So the people pleaser in me is like feeling really guilty here.
Carrie was so nice not to put our names in
exactly.
her book.
I know. I'm still waiting for the money from you guys, that check, that payoff check. So just whenever you get that in the mail, let me know. This was a real revelation to me, because I think so often we are kind because we want someone to do something for us. So I remember somebody sending me information on wanting me to jump on a launch team for their book, which is such a blessing to be able to do that for somebody. And it's such a blessing for the person launching a book to have, you know, this tribe of people to help promote it. It's a big undertaking. And I would have loved to have done this. I do very often jump on launch teams, but my life wouldn't allow it at that moment. You guys know what that's like when you just have so many things on your list. And so I said to this woman, I said, I'm so sorry. I would love to, but I cannot fit that in right now, but I can promote on my own. You know, I can't be part of your organized effort, but I can do this on my own. And she stopped talking to me. So she was so kind up front, and all the things she was saying and just connecting in, and how's your family and how's this going and blah, blah, blah. And the moment I said no, she stopped talking to me. What that left me feeling like was, the only reason you were being nice to me, the only reason you were being kind to me, is because you wanted something from me. And when I couldn't give it to you for no other reason than just a full calendar, I really saw your true motives. And I think it's so important that when we show kindness, it's not because we want to make somebody else look bad, or it's not because we want a certain reputation. We are just kind because we are choosing to walk out that uncommon way of living.
So the hard question is, how do we see that in ourselves? Because I think we deceive ourselves about ourselves so much. when we're being kind to get something, what do you think the indicators are? How what can we be aware of in ourselves?
I think you just check your motives. Why am I wanting to connect with this woman online? Why am I wanting to volunteer? Why am I wanting to reach out to that wife that's struggling early in marriage? Why am I wanting to help that mom whose children are in a really rough patch? Is it because I want to feel better about me? Is it because I want to look good to a certain amount of people? Is it because I want a certain number of followers on Facebook? And I think if you check your motives at the door, say, I just want to be kind for being kind. That is the attitude we should have. I don't want anything in return. I just want to be kind because that's how God has asked me to live.
It sounds like you're talking about selective kindness, where we pick and choose, not you, not, oh, you. And because at least for me, being kind to everybody is exhausting. And a lot of people don't deserve it. I'm sorry. They just, they don't deserve my best behavior. Okay.
Don't ever be in front of me in the car because I'm not super kind as I drive.
Oh, my word. This is so obviously I'm being tongue in cheek, I hope.
Yeah. Don't send Sherry an email about that, y'all.
Please. Yeah. Because you don't want to hear what I'll email back. All right. Well, in your chapter on uncommon obedience, you said obedience takes grit. We love that you use the word grit there because it requires us to step out of our comfort zone. Obedience often makes us face our insecurities, and none of us, recovering people pleasers and perfectionists and those of us who are highly sensitive people, none of us wake up in the morning going, oh, goody, today I get to face my insecurities. Woohoo! So you said there's three common ways that the enemy dissuades us. We run or hide, we excuse ourselves, and we question the call. And all three of those really hit home. So what I was hoping you could share with us is what are some of the benefits of facing our insecurities, of going ahead and experiencing the discomfort, of choosing to obey anyway?
My gosh, that's a hard sell. I get it. Because to me, I don't want to be uncomfortable and I don't want to necessarily step out what doesn't feel good to me. And so often I say, God, I just want to stay in this lane, like just clear my path and let me stay in this lane. And if you want me to do something else, maybe you've got the wrong person, or maybe if I fly under the radar, you won't really notice me. Or you know what? That's really a good idea, God, but I've disqualified myself because I've had some really bad experiences or made bad choices or had a shady past or whatever it might be. But here's what I'm learning. I'm learning that obedience is such a choice that we make. And every day we have the choice to do it. In every part of walking out our faith and just living the way that God wants us to live, we have a choice. Are we going to obey what he says or not? And here's what I've discovered. And here's why I'm an advocate for obedience. There's a blessing on the other side of it. So what I see in my life, and I'm sure you've seen this too, is when you choose to say yes to God, there is a blessing that comes with that. And it might not be immediate. It might not even be the blessing that you had hoped for, but there is something on the other side of that that makes you go, okay, this was really worth doing that. For example, when God asked me to become a speaker, I mean, it was like this vision I had at night, and I laid my head down and all of a sudden I had this PowerPoint of me standing in front of women speaking. And I said, no, there's no way I'm doing that, Lord. Not going to happen. I'm a face sweater, and I will stand in front of an audience and my face will sweat and they think I'll die. They'll be thinking that I'm dying. So I'm not doing it. Went to sleep, didn't think anything about it. Woke up the next morning and I thought, oh gosh, okay, all right, Lord, I'm going to make a deal with you, because we make deals with God. And I said, so I'll do it, but you've got to bring it to me. Do you know what, ladies? Every speaking engagement that I have had in these 12 years, people have just showed up on my email. People have just somehow found out about me. I don't do any kind, you know, other than have a website. I don't have any other promotion. I don't do anything else, but I continued to say yes to the next right step that God asked. Here's what I think happens. The enemy makes us look all the way down the road to the very end result. And we say, there's no way I can be obedient to that. God, I don't know how to get from where I am to where you want me to be. I think that is such a big tactic of the enemy. But what if instead of looking ahead that far, we just said, what is the next right step? I'm going to say yes to the next right step that you put in front of me. That's a game changer for me.
Mm. Love it.
So our audience is filled with reforming perfectionists. I think you put yourself in that category too, right, Carrie?
Absolutely.
Reforming perfectionists and people pleasers, and then highly sensitive women as well. So as just a parting thought, what do you have for us to encourage us?
I think the biggest truth nugget I want you to walk away with is this. Uncommon living is not about being perfect. Praise the Lord.
Yes.
Being an uncommon woman and living in uncommon ways is all about just being purposeful. It's about having passion for walking out our faith. It's about pursuing what the Lord is asking us to pursue. So if there are any of you out there going, that's a really great idea, that's a cute little tagline or title or whatever it might be, there's no way I can walk that out. You don't know my life. You don't know what I've been through, or I won't be able to do it perfectly, so I'm not even going to do it. What I want to say to you is the Lord would never ask us to do something perfectly. And the Lord would never ask us to do something that would set us up for failure. What I think delights his heart more than anything is when we say yes in our messiness and our brokenness and our imperfection and say, I'm going to try to walk this out with purpose. And Lord, thank you for forgiveness and for restarts and for second chances when I mess up, because I'm absolutely going to do that. So it's not about perfection. It's about purpose.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode59.
You'll find links to this week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcripts.
If you've enjoyed episode number 59 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, would you leave us a review on iTunes? You'll find a link on the webpage for this episode.
Be sure to join us next week when we'll be processing together what we learned from our time with Carrie.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it. Carrie, do you have a microphone? Even earbuds would do fine because you're a little soft.
Oh, I've never been told that before.
Okay. Oh, that's an outtake.
That's exactly. Not something anybody has ever said about me before, so thank you.
I told Sherry, I'm so happy and excited to be interviewing you this morning. Do you remember me calling you both in meltdown mode when I was writing my book?
I do.
It was like,
yes.
Sherry, I didn't even know you, and I'm calling you.
That was our intro.
That was one of about 10,000 meltdowns when I was writing that book.
Hey, this is not for the faint of heart, ladies. Writing books is, I think we're half crazy for doing it, to be honest with you.
No joke. Hey, and Carrie, here's the real kicker. Guess what Sherry and I are working on?